Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this week's installment in Substance Use and Abuse in Judaism. So this week we're going to be talking about, as well as using, perhaps the most frequently used substance, namely that of media. So as I'm saying this, so just before I actually get into it, I want to clarify that I'm not talking about the proper addiction that afflicts somebody. That is a different one. I'm going to be discussing the issue we'll have of degree of which media in general has taken over our lives, but not necessarily when it reaches a point where you actually need professional intervention. So this is more for the fact that, you know, I'm sure that many of us have noticed that our days and our lives have increasingly shifted to being in front of a screen or in front of some other form of entertainment of a various sort, and that's what we're going to be discussing. So before I get started, let's lay out the program for tonight. I would have said, you know, the TV listing, but I don't think anybody's used one of those in at least a decade. So we'll just call it the program. So tonight's program, it has four main parts. First is, what is the goal of media and social media? As well as, what are the potential issues that come up with the various forms of media? We also, when has this come before in Judaism? Is this a new issue, or maybe it's something that we've seen before? And also, the question is, what should we ultimately do with the fact that we have access to all these different forms of media? How are we supposed to utilize all that is at our disposal? So before we, you know, get into the heart of the matter, let's start by some quick stats. So how much time do people think that you spend on media in general per day? How much time would you wager on average per person in North America? Any guesses?
Well, other people spend 4 hours a day.
4 hours a day. Okay. Anybody have a different answer?
10 hours.
10 hours. Okay.
What do you mean by media? If you're in front of you're doing work in front of a computer screen, is that media? I don't know what you're talking about.
I believe in the statistics that I looked at, it excludes like work as doesn't count. As in, let's say if you're, let's say if your job happened to have been, you work at a desk, you've got a desk job for, 10 hours and you're using a computer, didn't count. Because if so, then
6 hours a day. Six.
Six. Okay, so I found from two different websites. Again, all these statistics, grain of salt, because the way they were taken, as well as other things, and also the fact that most of the data is from, I believe, 2019, so pre-pandemic. So, but be that as it may, here's what we've got. So first, this is courtesy of InsideIntelligence.com, based on eMarketer. Again, it came out in April 2021. Some of the data was obviously, pre-pandemic included. So here is the amount of hours amongst the population. So again, so we have the current, which is the most recent one that was actually accurate, would be 2020. The rest is just projection based on the statistics. So here it says the total amount of time spent on with media. It lists it as between 12 hours or so in 2019, up to 13 and a half hours in 2020. And then slowly increasing before tapering, before again hovering in at night at around 13 hours.
Now, so if that's 13 hours, and they work for 8 hours, and they sleep for 8 hours, so that means that they have about a 30-hour day, and we haven't even talked about eating.
Yes, so clearly things are going to have to overlap. Clearly, but this means that again, a solid. Again, it's like 6 hours of your day in front of digital media, even if they're all overlapping with each other, that's still an obscene amount of time spent. So even in the most, the data from 2015 that I saw on Wikipedia in terms of social media, in terms of general media, not social media in particular, but general media consumption, placed it at around, in North America, at around somewhere between 4 and 5 hours. I think it was 290 minutes. So just short of 5 hours of media consumption per day. And here's a nice convenient graphic that I found courtesy of, of DataStream, right? Again, via Googling. So just look at the numbers. Again, these times might overlap, but But note the sheer amount of time being used here, right? Comparing 10 years ago versus modern, right? So just see the amount of time spent. You see that it's roughly a little bit over 10 hours spent in total on all these various forms of media, and realize that it does take up a very, very significant portion of our day. Even if those were all simultaneously being done, that still, you know, if you're doing all four at once, which is hard to do, so you're still looking at around 5 hours of your day spent on these various forms of media, right? So as far as it being an all-consuming, you know, taking over your day and your life, seemingly so. And this is not even the statistics about how often you do it while you're at work, when you should be doing work, and things of that matter, right? When it's conflicting with just general, how much time has been spent, and without listing what it's coming at the expense of. So clearly we have a large amount of time on our hands, and a lot of it spent in some form of media. So the question is, so what are we supposed to do about that? Is that good? Is that bad? Right? What do we do with this fact? So to that, I want to start up by opening up. What do we think the goal of media is? Right, if you had to guess, what would you say that the goal of media is?
Sell advertising.
Advertising, so making money. Good. What else is the goal of media? Anybody here have a positive view of media?
Entertain.
To entertain us. That's right. Sometimes it's entertain us. What would the more, anybody a little more altruistic?
Inform us.
Provide us information.
Right. I heard inform us. Thank you, Abba, as well as McDrenisov said, you know, information, right? The goal is to like tell us things. But is it purely because
of I'm really not sure what the parameters are here. If I'm checking my banking, ordering an Uber using Waze, is that part of this? I don't because I'm doing all that on my smartphone. I'm using my smartphone to do that. I'm not sure if that's part of this context. Maybe it's not relevant.
That's technically part of it, but is it not really? As in, let's say if you're using it, let's say instead of like as it is, but as far as numerical wise, the amount of time spent doing something like that is generally around, you know, not even half an hour, and that would also fall under the thing you would normally be doing anyways, just now you're doing it on your phone instead of, you know, calling up a cab and saying come pick me up, or hailing one down Matt, like, you know, outside in the cold, doing it on your phone at the same amount of time doesn't really count as
okay. So tell me if this is relevant. When I was growing up, we couldn't afford long distance, and we would fake person to person and maybe talk to somebody from around the world for 30 seconds because it costs so much. My daughter made Aliyah, and during COVID, this has been a life send of being able to talk to her for free endlessly. So is that media? I'm not sure if that's part of this either.
So that we call would be a positive side of the extent of social media and the like. You're considering WhatsApp and the like, do that. So then sometimes there are positive parts of it, but that's not what the main, that's more communicate, more improved communications more so than it is media.
Because you're not talking about social media and all that.
Social media, yes. But as far as, let's say, you know, I'm talking to you, I'm going to not really call that media.
Okay. So if I was yesterday on a Facebook group with my high school,
that would count as social media, but if I'm simply calling you on the phone, I mean, again, not the biggest of deals, but the point is that that's definitely not that you decided to call your friend, and instead of meeting up in person, you're now having a phone call instead, right? Currently this year would, you know, once upon a time would have been in person to buy it, but now it's on, you know, online instead. So to call that a media form is a little bit of, maybe might be a bit of a stretch, but to call it, because once you're personally interacting, to say that. But again, overall, the goals of media, right? When we think of media, the ones that make money, the industry, right? So here's how I would summarize it. Again, feel free to argue if you don't agree with any of these points. First one is the goal of media is to keep your attention, right? That's why they use flashy titles, clickbait, you know, colorful, right? That's one of the main goals. They also seek to control your time. It's your attention. Want to make sure that you have your eyes and for as long as possible. And of course, the ultimate goal is partially towards your money, right? Yes, there are a small minority of the media, which is, you know, designed to give you a, you know, for altruistically, but a majority of media in general of all the various forms, such as we mentioned before, it's interested in making money. And last but not least, the goal is to do so always, right? So you could call it entertainment, you could call it, you know, providing a service, but at the end of the day, it is something that aims to take up a lot of our time, energy, and resources, not necessarily towards a productive end, right? So that's what media often tends to do. And now there aren't amazing things done by, you know, by media, let's say such as done by muckrakers, right? Or, you know, media has been able to, you know, topple governments, but that's unfortunately not the majority of what media is used for nowadays. So let's start by laying out, what do people think might be some potential issues that come up with the usage of media? Right. So there are some positive things, like we mentioned before, about how it helps increase communication across the world, but there also are some potential downsides. So what would we say some of the downsides are? Of the fact that we have such a large and robust media at the moment.
You're not conversing with other people. You're just concentrating on the media.
Right. You are far more focused on the medium than you are on what your life should be. Good. What else?
Anonymity and Lashon Hara.
Anonymity allows you to do Lashon Hara better. Okay. Could be.
Bittul Torah.
Very good. We'll have a whole piece on that. Don't worry. Right? It's a waste of time. You could be doing something good with your time instead you're doing it with media. Okay? So here's the four that I thought of. One that, I mean, surprise nobody mentioned, is that not all the content that you have provided by media is anything that is worthy. A lot of time it is, you know, calling it garbage would be charitable, right? But it could be worse, it could be incendiary, right? And for more on problematic content, then use your imaginations. The question is usage of your time, Bittul Torah, as Izzy mentioned. Right. That also is a question that comes up as well, as what does using the media cause? Does it change you? Like, what are some of the effects, such as what does it cause you to do? Anything that everything around us, all stimuli, generates certain reactions from us, and are those necessarily the reactions that we desire? As well as, it might be potentially all-consuming, as I'm sure many of us know. So you may have heard of binge watching, right, with Netflix. Right, where somebody, you know, spends all day, you know, simply, you know, watching TV from morning till night, right, and, you know, forgetting about what they're actually supposed to be doing, right. And this is a quite frequent occurrence, unfortunately. So, those are all potential issues that can come up with media.
There's also privacy issues.
Right, so there could also be issues of, let's say, use of, depending on what you're posting, whether you violate somebody's privacy. But that's generally not technically what that can be easily skirted by the fact that generally when you sign up for these things, you inherently agree to how the system works. And part of it is they allow that you agree to let the system utilize your data in the ways that you do.
There's also like fake news, people getting the wrong ideas of things as they hear it on the internet.
Right. So there's also the fact of the matter is that media, that depending on the source of the media, might end up being, you know, improper content, as we mentioned before, right? So the wrong type of content, right? You can easily be getting, you know, lies, false information, if the source of information isn't vetted properly, which is also something that you could be concerned about. But for our purposes, I want to take a little bit of a stroll through history and see times when the first time we saw what I would consider to be modern media and when it came up and what the reaction was in the Jewish people. So the first time is in the time of the Maccabees, namely, so we would return the clock back around 2200 years ago, again, to the time of the Hashmonaim. You know, 150 BCE. So this is from First Maccabees discussing what led up to the Hanukkah story. So here we have that there's many Hellenized Jews who led people saying, "Let us go and make a covenant with the Gentiles around us, for since we separated from them, many disasters have come upon us." And this pleased them, and then they decided to go to the king, right? who authorized them to observe the ordinance of the Gentiles. They built a gymnasium in Jerusalem, corn and Gentile custom, removed the mark of circumcision, and abandoned the Holy Covenant. They joined the Gentiles and sold themselves to do evil. So here, the media form of entertainment we're referring to here is the use of something called a gymnasium, right? And a stadium for entertainment and playing sports at. And the result of doing so was two things, right? Undoing the Brit Milah, which is pretty bad, and generally abandoning the Holy Covenant, right? So that's, so why is it bad? Because being involved in these certain media forms back then, right? Greek culture caused you to abandon Judaism. And that's pretty bad. But not to worry, it gets worse. So we look at 2 Maccabees. So here, this is another version of the event, of the same events. This time we see that the Kohen Gadol at the time, the vile Jason, was very good at Hellenizing everybody. How good was he at doing so? The priests no longer attend upon their service at the altar. Instead, what do? They despised the sanctuary, neglected the sacrifices, and they hurried to take part in the unlawful proceedings in the wrestling arena after the signal for the discus throwing. So because they're so consumed by the spectacle that was going on in the arena, they stopped offering the korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash. The temple stopped functioning because of this new media form, this new entertainment known as the gymnasium. To make things worse, they disdained the honors prized by their ancestors and putting the highest value upon Greek forms of prestige. Okay, so what do we have? So what do we have wrong here? Right? So we have what's wrong, what's the problem with the consumption of this foreign culture and foreign media is it Hellenizes you, meaning it makes you no longer Jewish. It stops you from doing the mitzvot, right? Even the Kohanim aren't doing it. The modern day analogy would be, imagine if, you know, on Shul Shabbos morning, the rabbi's giving his drasha, right? Everybody's got rapt attention. Then all of a sudden you hear a little beep from his watch and he's like, oh, sorry, the game's on. Gotta go. See ya. And he runs out of the room, right? That would be pretty bad. And that's what was going on in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, at the time right before the Hanukkah miracle occurred. And also we have the issue of, right, everybody's switching out what they should be doing. Instead of doing the Torah mitzvot, doing things that are proper, instead they value what Greeks value, right? So they swap out, you know, good Torah values with what's basically idolatry, worshiping that the Greeks like to do. So as far as now, right, so the first interaction we had with, you know, with foreign media is not exactly a positive situation. So now, so in case you're wondering, oh, that's it happened once. We learned our lesson after Hanukkah. Not really. So fast forward about a century or so. So has anybody here ever gone on a tour through Jerusalem before? All right, so what are the biggest buildings? Who are they all constructed by? All the big buildings. Let's say the Kotel. Herod. Who built it?
Herod.
Right, Herod. So now we're going to the time of Herod. Right, so this is told to us by Josephus. So Herod, yes, he did have many great construction projects, but he also was a little bit on the Roman side and a little bit influenced by the Romans. By that I mean by a lot. So Herod revolted from the laws of his country and corrupted their ancient constitution by the introduction of foreign practices, which constitution yet ought to have been preserved inviolable. In the first place, he appointed solemn games to be celebrated every fifth year in honor of Caesar, and built a theater at Jerusalem and also a great amphitheater in the plain. He writes, here's again Josephus, you know, Jewish historian, the time of the destruction of the temple, reporting on things that happened around a century earlier, right? So this is what Herod had done. He built this beautiful, beautiful amphitheater. And what's the reaction of the Jewish people at the time? So they're not happy with Herod. Why? Because it is opposite to the Jewish customs. For we have had no such shows delivered to us as fit to be used or exhibited by us. But to natural Jews, this was no better veneration than dissolution of those customs for which they had so great a veneration. Right? So putting up of a stadium, right, the amphitheater, putting on the nice shows, you know, the Odyssey, the Iliad. Not doing it. In the case, so that was a problem because you're putting on shows that are not Jewish, wrong thing to be putting on. But it gets worse because what do they do besides having shows? They also have gladiatorial games where it is no better than an instance of barefaced impiety to throw men to wild beasts for the foreign delight of the spectators and appear to be no less of impiety to change their own laws or foreign exercises. But above all the rest, the trophies gave Moses to the Jews, for as they imagined them to be images included within the armor that hung around about them, they were sorely displeased at them because it was not the custom of their country to pay honor to such images. So here, right, so what are the issues we see from Herod? So we see the issues of they had the wrong type of shows. It was the wrong content, right? Good Jewish boys and girls shouldn't be watching Greek shows. Also, it's very much against tradition, this whole scenario. Not to mention the cruelty involved with the cruelty involved of killing people for entertainment, as well as the fact that we swapped out what used to be, you know, the high goal of, you know, serving God is now instead with, you know, let's all fight for the trophy. So in the modern context, you might say that, you know, again, what would you replace for trophies nowadays people aim for? You could say it's, you know, popularity, likes, right? Reshares, whatever you want to, whichever, you know, insert, you know, what's currently being used for what makes something more popular. That's not what we're supposed to be having as our goal. That's not where we're supposed to be going. Right? And that is the new form of idolatry, right? So then that's what's going on. Then, again, is this truly idolatry? Well, the answer is that at some ancient games, yes, it was literally idolatry, that when you had the original games, you know, why they called the Olympics is because it was dedicated to Olympus, meaning the gods, the Greek gods and later Roman gods who resided on Mount Olympus. So again, it was idolatrous, but note here that's not mentioned here is that it was because it was dedicated to foreign gods. But the issue primarily is that the idea of what you're working toward a trophy is not considered to be something of value by the Jewish people. And also worthy of note is that Josephus is not a rabbi, right? These are all sources again. Yeah, these are not rabbis. This is not, we had that so far, the anonymous author of Maccabees, right? Somebody who's, you know, a big fan of the Hanukkah miracle, living within, you know, a generation or so of having occurred, as well as Josephus, you know, a former Jewish general who turned historian. So let's keep going. So now, perhaps the most important source, in my opinion, is the Talmudic view of entertainment. So what would you think? Do you think, so some people may have heard me go through this before, but there is also a Talmudic view of entertainment, right? So there are many a story that take place involving entertainment, but I want to focus primarily on the story as portrayed in the Tosefta and Avodah Zarah. So there's several stages, which I'll go through with you, that I think will help us understand a little bit about what was going on in the heads of the Jewish people in the time period and how they were reacting to the various things going on that were paralleling their time period in terms of what was in vogue in the various theaters and entertainment at the time, right? The ancient media. So here we go. First, we see, starting off, talking about how one should not go to theaters of non-Jews because entertainments are arranged in the honor of idols, right? These are the words of Rabbi Meir, right? The problem here is Avodah Zarah, right? So that would make sense because, again, a lot of the games were literally dedicated to Hercules. Yeah, insert name of your favorite god here. He had games. He had a show. All of them did. But the sages say, were such entertainments given, there is a prohibition of being suspected of idolatrous worship. Where such entertainment is not given, the prohibition is because of being in the seat of the scornful, or in Hebrew, Moshav Leitzim. So the Chachamim say, you're right. Sometimes it's problematic because it's idolatrous. But the other time the problem is that it's called seat of the scornful. So now what exactly is that referring to, and why is that bad? So that's quoting the first pasuk in Tehillim, saying praiseworthy. We'll see the full version in just a second, right? We're saying that praiseworthy is the one who sat in the house of God, as opposed to the one who sat in the seat of the scornful. All right, so that's the first pasuk we have in Tehillim, right? So that's what that prohibition is based on. So then, don't worry, the prohibition continues. In case you weren't satisfied by outlawing theaters, we get more specific in the second iteration of this prohibition. Still in the Tosefta. So those who visited the Itzar Tzionin or the Karkamonin, the stadium of the circuses, and they witnessed there the performances of the various sorcerers or enchanters, that of Bukyan, Mukyan, Lulyan, Mulyan, Blurian, Saglurian, this is somebody who has violated the seat of the scornful. It says in Tehillim, V'moshav leitzim lo yashav ki mitorat Hashem chafso. Right? Happy is the man, right? It says this is the seat of the scornful. Again, right? Happy is the man who has not walked the counsel of the wicked, nor sat in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. From here you can infer that those things cause one to neglect the Torah. Or as Izzy said earlier, bittul mitalmud Torah, right? Why is it so bad to do these things? In case you weren't clear what seat of the scornful was, the issue is bittul talmud Torah, right? It takes away from the time that you have and that you could have been learning Torah, and instead you're now spending all your time at these nice shows. And in case you're wondering, you know, what the names of those things that ended with Iyun were, the answer is they're all various forms of clowns, entertainers. And what is the word in Hebrew for clowns? Anybody know?
Leitzan.
So here, right, Moshav Leitzim, it is a great pun. While at the same time outlawing going to any comedy, the rabbis made a pun. Okay, so right, as it seems right now, you know, fun is outlawed. I can't go to the theater, can't go to the circus, I can't go to the comedies. All fun is outlawed. Can't go to the games. Everything's out. But then the Tosefta continues. And here it seems to be changed a little bit. It's that first it starts with saying that one may go to the theater if the non-Jews for needs of the state. But if he conspires with them, it is forbidden. So all of a sudden, if you have a good reason to go and you're not trying to sabotage the Jewish people by going to the theater and you're actually doing something helpful, right? Let's say if you're going to go lobby the Roman senators and hang out all day at the theater, then that's okay. But if you're, you know, doing their plan of revolt against the Jews, then that would be bad. Okay. I mean, that's pretty logical, I guess, but like a little strange. And then we get to the, you know, a little more graphic. Going to Nistarton, which is the great Greek word for gladiatorial arena, that's considered to be murder. But so you think, oh, just stop right there. That's it. But it continues. And then it says, but it's permitted to go to stadiums. Because by doing so, one may shout to save the victim. And in fact, Renata permits it for two reasons. First, because shouting might save the victim. And second, because one might be able to give evidence of death for the wife of the victim as to enable her to remarry. So, I don't know about you, but like that sounds very strange, right? So, it's murder to go watch them, you know, fight to the death for entertainment. Yet all of a sudden, Renata comes out of nowhere and says, it's okay. So what's going on here? Right? How is that possible that it's prohibited? Yet there's these, you know, these exceptions to the rule. And in fact, there's another line afterwards in Tosefta that says that you're allowed to go to, notice we'd mentioned, you know, a whole bunch of them. So now we added it in. You can go to the Itzar Tzionin, which is basically a combination of the two words from before, of Itzadion and Itzarton. And why can you go? Because Sabuch Matzil, because you shout out and protest, and you can go to the circuses because of Yishuv Medina, because of the potential good you can do for the country. But if you do so against the Jews, it's prohibited. So what's going on here? So also worthy of note is that when the Gemara quotes Tosefta, it quotes it completely out of order before going on for the next page to quote all of your favorite drashot that you've heard of before about why it's important to learn Torah, why if you keep the Yom Balayla, you have to learn day and night, and all those other, you know, all those other things are all in the following. Again, this is the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet, through Yud Chet Amud Bet, right? There's this whole long thing going through why you're supposed to, you know, learn Torah. So what's going on here? So there's two basic options. So one option is that this whole sequence is not meant halachically whatsoever. This is simply recommendations, right? We're saying that, you know, you really shouldn't go, but it's not like prohibited. Like, it's a bad idea. You're going to stop learning Torah. You're going to waste your time. You might be considered to be accessory to murder. You might not. You never know. But there's another option. What this looks like to me is it sounds like what happened. The rabbi saw it's prohibited, right? They said only bad things happen. It's idolatrous. It's a waste of time. You should stay very far away. What did they do? They prohibited it. And then that was the initial stage. And then they said it again. Right, and made sure, in case you weren't clear, we only said, you know, theaters and circuses. So let me clarify and say that it's not only theaters and circuses, it also includes all these other things that you guys thought weren't included. Don't do them either. They also are bad. But then what happens? They notice that everybody's still going. Everybody's basically ignoring the rabbis. And so they're like, okay, so we got to figure out how to rein this in a little bit. So let's give an option. So you shouldn't go. But if there's a productive reason that you can give to justify it, maybe it's okay, right? If you're going because you need to cheer him on, and that way when it comes time, when the emperor says, should I kill him or not, you say, no, he did a good job, let him live. That's a good enough of a reason. Again, not the best of reasons, you shouldn't be there, but that is a good reason-ish. And as far as, you know, the reality is that that's where all the important senators hang out. And if you want to lobby the senators and the various government officials, you have no choice but to go there. So should you go there for fun? Of course not. But if you have to be there for another reason, maybe you can go, right? You still should not. It's a terrible thing, a waste of your time. But, you know, just please don't, and be wary of the consequences. And in case you're wondering, you know, how bad is it, like, that they said this? So the rabbis actually were a little harsher than that as well. So there's a city in Israel called Tor Shimon, which the Talmud Yerushalmi in Tanit explains that was actually, the city of Tor Shimon was destroyed for one of two sins, either because of licentiousness or because they played ball on Shabbos. So as far as playing ball on Shabbos, that's a whole separate thing we're going to leave aside for now. But let's focus. So, or licentiousness, again, how that can be bad is also. But let's focus on the case of the playing ball, ignoring the Shabbos part. So that is the explanation of the Korban Ha'idah, who says, what's the problem? One issue is maybe they're violating Shabbos all day and all night, and that's why God decided to destroy them. The other option is that they were being mevata, they're wasting their days away, And we're not learning Torah, right? They spent all day playing sports, and they did not spend time properly. They should have learning Torah, and that's why they ended up being destroyed. So this seems that the act of wasting time isn't simply a recommendation of rabbis, but it actually has a pretty serious consequence. So based on this, it seems like we got no hope. And in case, you know, you're wondering why we have no hope, it's important to point out why exactly these games were instituted in the first place. So in Rome, right, it wasn't just, you know, one place. Throughout the Roman Empire, there were all these games. The question is, why were there Roman games everywhere? So before I tell you what the historians have to say, let's take a look at what we see from our own sources. This is from one of my favorite Midrashim, which you may have seen in Toronto Torah a couple weeks ago. The story of Yossi Maona. So Yossi Maona was giving drasha one week, and he upset the Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. By that I mean, sorry, the Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the one we know of from the Mishnah, his grandson. But here's how Rish Lakish calms him down. He calms him down by telling him that We need to thank the nations of the world for bringing Mind into their theaters and circuses and performing before them. So that way they don't come to talk to each other, get into meaningless fights. But in our case, Yoshi Maona said a word of Torah. You can't be bothered by that, can you? Right? The clear implication of this line in the Midrash is the rabbis knew exactly why the Romans put on the spectacle. The goal of the great Roman spectacle, the gladiatorial arena, was to keep the masses happy. Plain and simple, they knew that if you were happy and fed and laughing, you might ignore the wholesale slaughter of your neighbors and say, "Ah, it's all good. I've got a beer in my hand. There's a good show. It doesn't matter." So, keep your wondering as far as so historically, how'd that come up? So it came up because in Rome there was a very large group of individuals who were former military men, and when they're not on duty, what would they tend to do? They would hang around. And when they're hanging around, they would often get up to no good. If they're up to no good, they would start rioting. And what happens when people start rioting? Right? That's bad for public safety. It can lead to rebellion. So they decided, we're going to keep all of those unsavory characters happy and fed. And therefore, they decided to have state-sponsored entertainment. Right, so if you had, I put a link here. Again, you can Google, imperial sponsorship of gladiatorial games. That'll go, and you can see many Roman sources acknowledging just that. That's why they had games, and that's why it was sponsored by the state, because that was the goal. Right, the goal that was to entertain you, the goal that was to keep you happy. And in fact, it was very successful, and it worked for several majority of the time of the Roman Empire. But towards the end, there was this, the Christians eventually decided that, well, meaning like the Christianity, meaning the Holy Rome, the Pope and the Church said, actually, we don't really like what's going on at the games. It's morally repugnant. And eventually they decided to get rid of it. And so games disappeared for several hundred years, actually. But it still is on the books, the prohibition of what is bad about these entertainment forms. And in case you're wondering about how bad it is, so fast forward to modern era. Don't worry, we'll go back in history a bit afterwards. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, 20th century, he's asked about our modern day sporting events, entertainment venues. So the answer, again, he's not talking about TV here. Just going to put that out there. But as far as this is talking about, again, can you go to, he's living in the lower, in Manhattan. Can I go watch the Dodgers game? Can I go to the Yankee game? So he says, some people might have thought that's a problem of chukatagoyim, of things that non-Jews do for no purpose. And he's like, no, we know why they're doing it. It's fun. So it's not that of an idolatrous practice that you shouldn't be doing. Well, there's a different reason. He quotes the Gemara we looked at that I mentioned before, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, who says that it's not an issue of idolatry anymore. There's still the prohibition of Moshav Leitzim. And all those who go to the game are violating the prohibition of Seed of the Scornful and are wasting their time from learning. And not just on the time that is there, but it'll cause you to stop completely from the Torah as it is explained to the Gemara there. And even more so, the theaters that can be found in our country and the sports teams, even in other countries, people seem to do without any connection to idol worship. And it seems to me the pastors of the Christian church, which is the majority religion in the USA, also frown upon matters of theaters and stadiums. And all for those who believe in Muhammad, which is the religion of the countries of Turkey and their countries. And if so, the majority of countries where the theaters and stadiums are found, there's no connection to the religions. So there's no prohibition of walking in their ways, of chukatagoyim, of idolatrous practices. But they are forbidden because of Moshav Leitz and Mittel Torah. And there is also a severe prohibition to incite the evil inclination of illicit urges in oneself, because most of them are plays of profanity and incite licentiousness. So based on what we read from Moshe Feinstein, is there any reason or saving grace for this deplorable form of entertainment known as the stadium, which you could very easily swap in the fact, television or things like that, right? What would we be able to have any fun? Right? Can we you know, enjoy watching a ball game on the TV. Can we do so? So the answer is, if you ask for Moshe Feinstein, the answer is no. It's Bittul Talmud Torah, not only the time that you go, but it'll cause you to abandon things, other things as well. But it's important thing to note while looking here for a second is that he mentions that the Christian church was against it, and so was Islam. As I'm sure many of us know nowadays, again, so this too was written, you know, well over, about 60 years ago or more, right? That's not the case anymore. Right, nowadays, right, I'm pretty sure that, you know, that people may have seen there's you know, a funny Super Bowl ad about how, you know, a priest, a rabbi, and an imam all going together to go watch Super Bowl, right? And all things like that, right? There's minyanim at sporting events. I know all the students and promotion that I know, they're almost all huge Yankees fans. So what's going on here, right? Something doesn't really add up. So let's first take a look at some of the reasons why we can actually go to these events. So we mentioned before some, such as for purposes of need of state, as well as for, you know, for the sake of national security. So, but are there other reasons maybe that one might be allowed to go to these sporting events? Before we get to that, I just want to make one disclaimer about what we have to realize is that we have to be wary of a lot of these things. The Moshe Feinstein is referring to of, it leads to other things, because the nature of a lot of these forms of entertainment is they are, to a certain degree, addictive. They cause a huge rush of dopamine and makes you want to keep doing so. Which reminds me of this response of the Rivash, where he, from 14th century Spain, where he explains the problem of gambling, whether or not there's, you know, you're stealing, right? You're not involved in the settlement of the world and you should really have a job. But the result of that matter is that gambling is disgusting, abominable, repulsive, and it has felled many victims and mightier those it has killed, right? The fact of the matter is that it can easily become an all-consuming desire that overtakes your life, and it can distract from what you need to do. So, right, but again, there are rabbis who do. So what are we supposed to do about that? So the question is, so maybe you could if you have the right reasons. So now let's go with the one that Gemara has. I know I was being very stacked on one side. So now I'm going to bring it back the other way. I apologize if that seems actually dishonest. But so now here we have the Rambam. The Rambam is talking in Hilchot Shabbat. Normally, you're not allowed to run on Shabbos because of Uvn Nechol. It's a weekday practice. But on Shabbos, you're allowed to for the sake of a mitzvah. And in fact, not only that, you're allowed to go do calculations you normally can't do, right? Business matters you can't do. But for the sake of a mitzvah, you can, right? You can measure to check whether there's enough water in the mikvah, or to know whether or not the garment you're wearing is tameh or tahor. You also are allowed to, you know, people may have noticed that a lot of times in shul, you have given aliyah, you donate some money to charity, right, or to the shul, right? It's been done for millennia. And the Rambam continues, again, this is based on the Gemara and Shabbat. So again, I quote the Rambam for sake of clarity, because it's the only time that I saw that you know, between the era of the Gemara and modern day, that anybody quotes the theaters, the Tertaratiot, and the Traklin. So this is the only time that I could find, right, for about a millennia, basically silence on the matter. But here we have the Rambam saying that it's okay to go to these things, even to the theaters, the circuses, Levakeach al Iske Rabbi Meshabbat, to deal with communal matters on Shabbos. And in doing so, it's actually considered to be a mitzvah, right? All these various mitzvot requirements, as in it's not, normally there's a problem of doing business and these sorts of things based on the Pesukim Sheher v'asot chavetzecha. So normally you did your own business is no good, but the business of heaven, that is permissible. So what exactly is going on here? Right? How is this permissible? right? So it appears that, again, that the prohibition that we had, it wasn't necessarily accepted as a prohibition, right? As I mentioned before, for multiple sages, it wasn't necessarily always accepted. And it's, as we see here, we see the quite obvious built-in exception, right, that you were allowed to go on Shabbos to a sporting event, even though you know that they're only throwing the sporting event because they want to raise your taxes afterwards, and you have to be there for the vote just so you can vote it down anyways, but even so, you're still allowed to go. Right? Again, not that I'm recommending that anybody here goes to a sporting event, especially not on Shabbos, right? That's not what I'm saying. The point being here is that if, you know, the local vote happened to take place after, you know, Friday Night Lights, you probably would be able, assuming you're not violating any other restriction on Shabbos besides the fact that you shouldn't be going to the game Friday night, you probably can go in for the vote. Right? So again, so there seemingly is room to go to the theater, to the circus, to the stadium, if you need it for the sake of communal affairs for a mitzvah. Which seemingly, again, sounds, considering what we've heard earlier, seems to boggle the mind. But that's not the only reason that we have. So now we're looking at the response of Murray Bruna, who says, right, he's talking about the racetrack. Somebody asks him if he can go out and see the rejoicing of the non-Jews at their horse racing. And he said, I permit it, as it is not at all similar to the issue of the prohibition of trapping animals in Avodah Zarah. Note, he does not mention at all the prohibition that we've been talking about Moshe Leitzim. He says, why are you allowed to go? Because I've seen people who have done this. Why? It is not for rejoicing. Why do you go? To learn a trade and purchase horses to run from enemies. And so I have seen people who have done this. However, I'm unsure whether it's permissible to go to watch when they rejoice by watching people ride opposite each other's sticks and shields, which are called let's edit. So then he's a fan of being involved in the business of horse racing because, you know, it's a good racket. But not so much about, you know, but a little hesitant about being involved in jousting. So here we see that you're allowed to, so if you decided to, let's say, if you're the Wilpons owning the Mets or, the, you know, the Wilfs owning the Vikings, I'm sorry, I'm sure there's other Jewish, you know, Jews who own many other sports teams. I just don't have a full list on the top of my head, right? Okay, Robert Kraft and the Patriots, right? Many, like, if you're doing it for business reasons, go for it. But if you're doing it for, but then be careful that you're not doing it too violent an activity. But good business is good business, and that's okay. So basically we've seen so far, so it seems that there's two different sides to this as to whether you can or you can't, you should or you shouldn't be going to the game. So let's summarize a little bit. So if we had, okay, we saw all the problems, right? Biddle Talmud Torah, it'll lead you in the wrong direction. It can take away all of your time. We also saw that there's also a certain time when you're allowed to go. So let's try and clarify so I'm going to boil down to several conditions that I'd say would allow one to potentially utilize and enjoy watching things for leisure. So from what we've seen so far, it looks like it's important that what you're watching is proper content, right? Don't go watching shows that are basically murdering people. Right, you like the old gladiatorial games are. That's problematic. There's ways around it, but you should be careful what you consume. Also, you don't want to be, you know, like what happened by Hanukkah, where you consume the improper content of the Hellenizing Greeks, which then leads you off of Judaism. You also need to be concerned that how the time is used. Right, you can't be like the Kohanim who were busy abandoning their avodah to go watch the game. But let's say you happen to have the time available, maybe we can debate going to do so, right? As in, I could quote you many sources, such as the, again, also quoted in the tour, where on Shabbos even, you're allowed to go, the young men are allowed to go run and jump and enjoy things that they enjoy because it's what their only Shabbos is and they're allowed to do so. But again, it's allowed because it's not the sole thing that they're doing. Right, is that it's not, they're not doing so instead of going to the game, it's in addition to, right? So as you know, my grandfather told me a story about how back when he was back in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg and in Brooklyn, right? So what happened every Shabbos afternoon, right? So around the fourth or fifth innings, the Dodgers used to allow for free admission because after the fifth inning, nobody is going to pay for a ticket. Well, who wants to come in? And so who would go in to watch the game? The answer is all the yeshiva buffers, some of whom later became Rosh Yeshiva of various places, not going to name names. They were all going on Shabbos afternoon to go watch. But that, again, not so bad. Again, because they weren't missing shul. It's a long Shabbos afternoon. Go watch the game. And also the question is, what is the effect of doing so? Is the effect of going to the game, does it lead you to do Avodah Zarah? If that's the case, well, you definitely should be going. It leads you to do other sins as well, like Rosh Hashanah dimensions, inciting the wrong urges. That'd be a problem. But if you're not, there is room maybe to permit it. And also the question is, another idea is, why are you using the media? Is the media simply something that is part of the way that you live, right? It's business, right? I for politics, right? But different than if this being the be-all end all of your life. But conversely, I'd like to show everybody, people may have seen this article. This is the conclusion of a nice long article by Rabbi Yitzhak Lau. He is the one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Doraita in Israel. So he wrote an article for Tradition about 10 years ago, talking about why against television. And his conclusion is, if modern orthodoxy wants to stand for ideals like nuanced thinking, becoming educated about the world, communal involvement, avoiding superficiality, promoting a better outlook on women, it should be discard Hollywood and abandon the television. Our most precious values should make us even more wary of this medium than are the Haredim. Of course, I do not own a television. I am modern orthodox. All right, so despite all that I told you before about, the potential ways, the loopholes that are around when you can, maybe it's not so bad. The reality is our consumption of media in general something that's productive and beneficial to us, or is it basically another vice that we have to learn how to deal with? So again, it is worthy of note that you have to be wary of that fact, that there are times when it can be good and times when it can be simply leading us down the wrong direction. So if I had to summarize all of our points, let's go through the negatives, then the positives, and then the takeaway. So what could be wrong with utilization of media? So first and foremost, we saw is the question of seat of the scorners, right? Wasting your time, bitul talmud Torah. Then we saw the issues of problematic content, right? It can be a bad, not only is it problematic content, what you're viewing being illicit, whether that be murder. Some people nowadays like talking about the other X-rated materials that are available online more early than before. But all those are problematic content you shouldn't be watching. That's also something to be wary of while utilizing these media forms. You also have to be concerned about idolatry, whether it means literal idolatry or the figure of idolatry. We place the values that are espoused by the media over the values that we know and have learned as true Torah Jewish values, making sure that we don't replace it with some glorified Hollywood values instead. We also have to be wary that it doesn't come at the expense of our learning Torah or forgetting our Torah, because as Ramosha Feinstein pointed out, a lot of times you're like, oh, it's just a game. Yeah, it is just a game until you use it instead of learning Torah and other productive matters. There's also the issue of the desires and insights, as well as we saw, it may actually make you accessory to a crime, as the case by the Gladiator Arena, if you're considered to be party to murder. And also, it may lead you to sin afterwards if you had inculcated the incorrect messages. You may actually leave there and then try and be like the Greeks, doing what precisely you should not be doing. And finally, the question is the usage of the various media forms considered to be a bad habit, something that gets in the way of things you should be doing, much like gambling does, in which case you should be very, very wary of anything to do with media. But of course, there also is the idea of that it can be used productively, right? So one thing is in case of public need or for business. But there's also the reality is that people will use it for other reasons too, right? As any substance is, it can be used for good or for bad. So what would I call media? Media is a tool. And like any tool, it can be used for good or for bad. The question is whether or not you use your various forms of media responsibly. Are you using the media to live your life, or are you living your life for the media? And most importantly, make sure that you use the tool, not that you are being used by it. So now I still have everybody's attention. Just want to, you know, remind everybody that next week we'll be addressing the issue of drinking on Purim, and as well as the following Sunday, right, on March 13th, we'll be having a panel on drug use, the pandemic, and the Jewish community, which everybody here is welcome to please pre-submit questions anonymously if you'd like via the link. And also, if anybody has any questions now relating to social media and the like, I can talk, if somebody's more interested in terms of the algorithms and how that works, I can discuss that as well. But, and how potentially social media is a bigger danger, I can discuss that as well. But overall, the lessons that we've spoken about so far has applied to more ancient forms of media that I know everybody here predated everybody here, because last I checked, nobody here is the millennial man who's thousands of years old. So just to let everybody know that to remind that these issues aren't new, media forms and how to deal with them is not a new issue, but it is an issue that we have to learn how to grapple with and deal with, especially in the modern age.